states will be tracking drivers through their licenses, a federal program promoting driving license technology that allows the tracking of motorists even when they are not driving. Electronic monitoring of motorists will soon expand dramatically as states include Arizona, Michigan, Vermont, and Washington begin to use RFID chips in drivers' licenses. Now, this is the key part. These electronic chips broadcast the identity of any cardholder to any chip-reading sensor within a minimum of 30 feet. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is promoting the tracking projects as part of its Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. Multiple cards can be read at a distance and simultaneously with vicinity RFID technology, allowing an entire car full of people to be processed at once. That according to a fact sheet from the Department of Homeland Security at Passport Card Technology. Although the licenses will initially be offered on a voluntary basis, often do we hear that, offered originally on a voluntary basis, before long it will not be voluntary. The program is expected to become mandatory sometime soon. The federal government just incentivizes their proposal so that each state, and by extension its citizens, feel like they have no choice but to go along with their program. That according to the National Motorists Association. Well, that's a privacy issue too, so why don't we start there with our friend Andrew Kolarik, who is standing by. Dr. Andrew Kolarik, thank you very much, who is always tracking these stories. Can I throw that one at you first, Andrew?
Oh, absolutely, Ian.
Yeah.
This whole notion of license plates and RFID tracking and so forth, you know, privacy is one thing, but, you know, this stuff is not as feasible as people like to make it, unless, of course, you're just going to spend the whole farm.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you have... If you have a 30-foot range to, say, these license plates, okay?
Right.
Now, where can you put monitoring stations to collect that information? So it would be on the highways, toll roads, major intersections in cities. So you have to put together this massive infrastructure to scan and collect and transmit that data.
Well, or they have police officers will have some sort of mobile device where they could sit, say, on the side of the road. And as everybody goes past, they can read their RFID chips as they go past and look for people who are wanted by the law or whatever.
Well, in that case, they would probably automate it with a computer system of all stolen cars and license plates or people with warrants. And the moment somebody drives by the cruiser, boom, an alarm goes off, the person's name pops up, and they know to go and pursue him.
Now, I will let's talk about that right there. Something about that doesn't bother me. I mean, I saw a police officer. I was at the Mall of America, actually, and I was walking in to grab something, and I went past a guy who had gotten pulled over for running a stop sign. When I pulled into the parking lot, this is how long it took me to find a parking space. When I pulled into the parking lot, he was just being pulled over for having run a stop sign. By the time I found a parking space and got out, he was getting cuffed and stuffed, and it looks like they had outstanding warrants on him and that sort of thing. So, I mean, is that all that different from that?
Well, you know, one of the justifications for this is increased law enforcement and in criminal investigations and bag and tag and so forth. But what you're really seeing is, and I'm not saying this is the primary agenda, but this is the major consequence to everybody, is our Fourth Amendment rights, which is reasonable search and seizure, is being lowered. The threshold is dropping at each and every one of these implementations. So whether it be RFID tagging, whether it be passports that, you know, people can scan with or without your permission, whether it be satellite surveillance, all of these things are lowering the threshold of information that we are able to prevent the government from acquiring.
Now, I'm bugged by the RFID chips because I feel like this is one step closer to the national ID card, and I'm not for that, and I don't believe that that is actually a reasonable response to our security issues. But that having been said, It's kind of weird in a culture where people are going out of their way to buy this type of tracking technology, right? Where they're paying extra to put a tag on their kids or their pets or themselves before they travel.
Well, this is just a natural extension of consumerism. It's a natural extension of innovators, which is a marketing concept. The people who are willing to try something, they're happy to pay for it. And there's also a segment of our society that likes these controls.
That's what I mean.
That wants to track and know and have some kind of assertion and empowerment of our government surveillance programs.
And this, we're talking with Andrew Kolarik, who's been utilizing computer information systems and studying privacy for a quarter of a century, and been a regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM about these new RFID driver's licenses. Right now, it's voluntary. Right now, the states that are doing it, that's how you can be a pre-dawn user of this technology. But at some point, it becomes mandatory. What's the worst case scenario, as you see it, with RFID chip driver's licenses?
I wouldn't say that I have a worst case scenario, but what I would say is, if we're really concerned about identity theft, if we're really concerned about all the fraud that goes with identity theft, then having devices that broadcast our data to anyone who has the ability to receive it and view it, and that includes decrypting it, which is not difficult with the power of computers these days, we're opening ourselves up to a whole host of data usage problems. And if you really want to secure things, privacy has to go with that. But this isn't about security. This is about empowering others to make use of our activities, our transactions, et cetera, et cetera. So for the government to do that, they also have to make it available to other people, even if it's inadvertent. And I would say that's really the worst situation there.
I wonder whether, and this is, I think you're right, I think it's difficult to imagine that it would take long for this to fall into the hands of the wrong people who'd be able to use computer technology to encrypt or decrypt these messages. But let me ask you about catching the people that are doing this. Like, theoretically, if you had a police officer who had RFID reading technology on him or her, you have somebody who walks past, and the cop is able to scan the fact that this person has five IDs on them. Well, that should be something right there. Well, hold on a second. This person's got five different IDs on them. Maybe they're a pickpocket. Maybe they're into identity theft. That might end up being used as a hedge against people who are taking advantage of others on that.
Well, or maybe look at it another way. Maybe you're at the beach, and you know how we give our wallets over to one person, and now we haven't taken our wallets back, and that person now has five IDs, and reasonable search and seizure. The machine says you must be guilty, so now we have the right to detain you, harass you, inspect, perhaps even arrest.
Right.
Are we trying to catch people who are just simply living their regular lives? Are we trying to actually enforce the laws that we currently have? Are we trying to increase the law enforcement powers? Really, what we have to do is backstep from all this technology, and let's determine what is it that we really want to do with this technology. And that's what I'd like to hear our legislators say.
What's the end game for this technology? What is it that ultimately it's going to be used for? Not the way in which they're rolling it out. What's not the toe in the water, but when we jump into the deep end, what's there for us?
In my opinion, the most likely scenario, and again, it's just a scenario, is that we won't be able to open a bank account, we won't be able to get a car, we won't be able to make a purchase without having that verifiable universal ID. And at that point, we might as well have them implanted as a chip.
Yeah. Okay. That would get a lot of people's religious hackles up as well. I mean, that gets pretty close to a mark of the beast. I mean, well, even people who aren't religious might start to feel like that.
But here's the thing. I actually don't mind the fact that there are people who view it that way, because there's at least a percentage of people who are looking after, for whatever reasoning, preventing these types of powers being universal. Let me just say a very simple concept. It is impossible for a government to claim to be protecting its citizens while it is trying to impose huge controls over those citizens. It takes the citizenry and the government to work together in order to protect both. And we're not approaching things that way.
Well, they did in California, right? They said no to this in California. I mean, they had it on the legislature. They voted out RFID driver's licenses in California. So it's possible to do it. And it's possible to simply say no. Now, when they keep dangling this big financial carrot at the federal level for states to go this way, states who want to make a budget for one reason or another will become very tempted to do that. Maybe that'll change with the change of administrations coming up in 2008. We'll explore that subject and more coming up on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew Kolarik will join us for the rest of this hour. The domestic satellite surveillance program. You think the voluntary RFID chips in the driver's licenses story is scary? Wait till you hear about all of the visual monitoring, the thermal imaging, the cell phone location, the GPS tracking that's going to be done with the domestic satellite surveillance program. We'll talk about that coming up with Andrew Kolarik for the rest of this hour. Coming up for the rest of the show, though, starting at the top of next hour, it'll be open lines, so we'll uncover the personal stories, the news that we haven't heard yet because it's only happened to you. Coming up on Coast to Coast AM, in for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Great show coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on, but it could be the perfect way to get your new year started off to a more healthy start. What are the connections between what you're eating and what ails you? We'll get to an alternative view on that coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Also, open lines on the way still coming up tonight. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett, and we'll get to Andrew Kolarik here in just a second. Back to the discussion about visual monitoring from these domestic satellite surveillance programs. Sure, it offers some benefits, but what is the dark side of this? The domestic satellite surveillance program explored fully next with Andrew Kolarik, privacy expert on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Always a pleasure to talk with Dr. Andrew Kolarik, privacy expert on Coast to Coast AM. So tell us more about this domestic satellite surveillance program. I don't know. I mean, it sort of seems like it could be about five different programs going on under that name.
Well, here's the thing. Nobody actually knows. They're keeping the specifics in a classified manner. So all they're saying is we're going to use satellites, and those satellites will be aimed at the domestic territory. And we'll create some kind of a legal framework, and we'll comply with all U.S. laws, and you have to trust us. So well, that's who, basically what they're doing.
Who's the they?
Well, Michael Chertoff, Homeland Secretary, Congress, who authorizes the monies for such deployments. I would assume the executive branch is involved in some manner.
I would think so.
And then there's probably a whole bunch of other agencies that are supporting the whole structure.
I guess my point is, tell me, this is a specific thing that's just getting started, it's an initiative, or this has been underway and they're just admitting to it?
Well, it's been underway, but they've put it on hold until there's a legal framework.
Ah. Okay, so they may already have been doing it for all we know. They're just stopping right now, and they're kind of going back and covering themselves with some sort of framework. And they're doing this with a vote coming up in Congress?
Well, the you know, the House of Representatives monitors and oversees the allocation of the funds. They actually say how much money you get to have to spend on programs. And so the oversight committee that oversees this particular program is saying, you know, we haven't been informed for 3 months what's going on here. And if you want to continue doing what you're doing, then you better put together a proper legal structure.
But I guess what it comes down to is when you say proper legal structure, this is all they require at this point is a proposal, some sort of 300-page draft that they submit to the committee, or does proper legal structure mean the passage of new laws that would allow them to do this?
Well, no, they're only going to use existing laws. However, the existing laws are so open-ended in some of these areas, and they're modified by court cases, that they have a wide latitude to do a whole lot of things on technical surveillance. What the committee is requiring is a operations manual, a specific list of objectives and means by which they're going to deploy the technologies. What are what's the operating manual for the department that's going to run this?
Right.
They want to know that there are going to be controls and procedures and policies in place so that no laws are broken, no abuses are done, and so forth.
Some sort of congressional oversight.
Well, yes, for a change. There's actually some congressional oversight occurring on some of these programs.
Now, the reason I mentioned that, have you seen Charlie Wilson's War yet, the new movie?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it's a new movie from Tom Hanks, and it's about this congressman, Charlie Wilson, who really almost single-handedly turned the U.S. government into a full-time, deeply committed partner in the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan, and did it without ever passing a law, without ever changing anything, without declaring war. He just did it using these existing frameworks, as you discussed. And it's very interesting because they could do a lot in committee without ever having to put it even to a vote for Congress. The committee could just decide that, you know, such and such a program was going to be doubled or tripled, you know, in its budget allocation. And that was all he had to get, was the permission of a couple other guys in the room.
Well, that sounds about right. But believe it or not, this is a great opportunity for the discussion to actually hit the floor of the House and the Senate to say, look, guys, we actually need a new look at what the legal framework should be, because the technologies and the laws are not keeping pace.
And the stakes are pretty high on this domestic satellite surveillance program. We're talking about visual monitoring of U.S. citizens.
Well, you know, if your backyard, there was a court case where somebody was growing an illicit drug in their backyard. He had a 10-foot fence, but he didn't have any kind of a overhead tarp over the plants. And that was, you know, I believe it was some kind of aircraft went over by. That was enough evidence to arrest and begin the whole proceedings. Now, while in that case, I'm not sure, you know, what the politic is, but that's an obvious state. But with thermal imaging, now you can look inside somebody's home with, you know, all of the miscellaneous capabilities. Just look at what Google Earth can do.
Right.
Now, you got to believe that a Homeland Security satellite system is going to do a lot more than Google Earth.
Well, let's go back for a second. I'm not particularly bothered by pot personally. I don't smoke it, never have. I think we have a big wrinkle in our national philosophy on when it comes to marijuana versus our legal drugs like alcohol. So that having been said, if it's against the law though, and somebody's passing overhead and they see that they've got a whole backyard full of pot in a plane, and they call the police and they say, hey, look, there's a guy growing a whole backyard full of pot, that doesn't bother me. To me, that's not the problem. The problem is, as you say, if they can use thermal imaging and they go, hey, wait, you know what? We're picking up all of these extra light sensors. It looks like somebody's got a big domestic, you know, indoor farm going in their basement. According to the imagery we have, we'd better go find out what they're growing. That's when it's a problem.
Well, but here's the thing. That previous case sets a precedent, which then additional enforcement may be furthered. So it's not the issue of the drug or the crop or the covering. It's an issue of whose responsibility is it, by the court's perspective, the court's interpretation, to prevent overhead or satellites or wireless eavesdropping or whatever. Whose responsibility is it? Is it law enforcement's not to look, or is it the owner's or property manager's responsibility to prevent people from looking?
Well, I think that's an important difference, though. I mean, that's a huge difference. If you walk around nude in your house, fine. Who's got a problem with that? If you mow your lawn nude and somebody can see it from the backyard next to you, maybe that's a problem.
Well, it depends on are they attractive to begin with.
Well, okay. Well, that's fine. We can write that into the law.
We have to view all sides here. But the reality is, once you can penetrate inside the house by any means, where is your privacy? Where does it begin? Where does it end?
All right.
Where does the legal authority have a division line where they can and cannot proceed without due process? And this whole notion of not just satellites, but electronic surveillance needs to be addressed in some new law so everyone is in agreement, and we're not just using old law that has been misapplied or misinterpreted by lower courts.
Again, we're talking with Andrew Kolarik, privacy expert, on this new domestic satellite surveillance program, which is being sort of reconsidered at the congressional level. But if it goes forward from here, we're looking at thermal imaging from satellites that is essentially sort of data mining, looking for things to arrest people for. But also this cell phone location and GPS tracking. Again, I go back to something we talked about last half hour. People are paying cash money right now to be tracked with their GPS, or, you know, and we've heard many stories about police being able to find somebody who is at the brink of death with cell phone locations. So tell me more about the threat as you see it from that becoming part of the domestic satellite surveillance program when it sounds like it's already here.
Well, the all the technologies already exist. But bringing it all together and coordinating the multiple monitoring systems underneath one global eye over the United States will create such a leverage in that information and the surveillance powers that if somebody, has a cell phone, has a license plate that has the RFID, is entering a building that was previously under surveillance. Their whole world is now subject to being monitored, tracked, and this is all the evidence, just by circumstantial, needed to then issue warrants and just open up their entire life. Now, I'm not opposed to due process, but I believe that what we're doing here is we're stacking the evidence in a way that you have no way of controlling what you're providing to the government, and then they're able to take that evidence without your knowledge, acquire additional due process, such as warrants and so forth, and all of a sudden your whole world is being turned upside down, investigated, and so forth, so on. I don't think that that's what our founding fathers had in mind.
No, I would agree. Also, this then crosses into the idea you're talking about coordination then. What other satellites are out there that could be coordinated together to complete the net, as it were, Skynet, as it were, for the American citizen?
Well, I hope, one, that there is no artificial intelligence to that Skynet.
We all see what that can lead to.
Arnold Schwarzenegger would make a return in the future.
Right. Let's hope. For that matter, that's why California voted against the RFID chip technology for driver's licenses, because they had the Terminator as their governor. They looked at that and they went, wait a second, we've seen where this is going.
Well, you know, there is a little bit of line between fantasy and reality, and a lot of people like to drive all over that line.
I'm seeing the line disappear. So what else could be coordinated then? What other satellite systems are we talking about? How pervasive could this surveillance be?
Well, this particular system, for instance, states that they're not going to do any kind of verbal surveillance, meaning if you're talking on your cell phone, they're not going to be listening in on your conversation. But that's not Homeland Security. That's the NSA. Well, now, if you combine what these departments and agencies, their abilities, now you can do a real coordinated effort to find just about anything, find where they were, what their footprints were, you know, what their activities, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think what it is individually, all of these various agencies have a small role in the technical surveillance. But when you bring their coordinated effort together, there is nothing they cannot find, no one they cannot locate, so forth, so on.
All right.
That's the real threat.
Now, what are the benefits to having this program? What's going to be in the brochure when they take this in the sales pitch to the American public?
Well, all right, I'll play the role of salesman on this, and I hope your listeners don't beat me up, because this isn't, I'm going to throw my disclaimer out there, but we'll do a little
role-playing. It won't do any good. Won't do any good, Andrew. Go ahead.
Well, that's true, but that's okay. I would sell this program by saying, we're going to have border security, because now we can monitor individuals crossing the border. We know where they are, when they are, where they're headed, and we can send people to intercept them. That would be one. Okay? Two would be, let's say that a disaster occurs. We can locate where the people are sitting on top of their houses while the bureaucrats figure out how we're going to go get them.
Okay.
I would say that if you had small planes which smuggle drugs, which may fly explosives into a building, we can track small planes that generally the airports don't monitor. And you can do that all over the place. And then I would say in the last sales brochure item would be criminal investigations. Let's say the mayor of a city was just assassinated or killed or whatever. Well, you should be able to, through backdating the visual evidence, know who walked in and out of what building, where they came from, and backtrack all the way back to their home or whatever. And then you should be able to find that individual. And,
so,
and that's what I see them promoting this whole domestic surveillance on.
Going back to your point about coordinating for a disaster, I saw a story tonight in the news about a boy that had been swept away by an avalanche. It took a half an hour to find his body under the snow, because all they had to use is the same system they've been using now for, you know, how many years of humankind, sticks. All they had was big, long sticks, and they could stick it in the snow and hope that they hit something and that they could find the body that way. They find the body. But this, theoretically, you know, if you had something like this, and let's say every skier had an RFID identification or they had a coordinated satellite system like this, theoretically, they could find somebody without having to line up 100 people with sticks poking into the snow. And that would go a long way, I think. A lot of people would go, oh, well, we got to have this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If the technology is truly as advanced and highly developed and well utilized as we would hope that it could be.
Okay. You want to take some calls on this?
Absolutely.
All right, let's use this then to kick off open lines coming up next hour. We'll just do the first half hour with Andrew Kalerik. We'll take some calls and we'll see what other people's concerns are with the domestic satellite surveillance program. And again, right now, this program is sort of on hold. They were sort of racing ahead at the governmental level to get this done. They are stopping down to get the legal undergirding that they didn't get before, big surprise, and they're trying to get it now. And so we have sort of a chance to take our breath and say, do we want this? And what is the future? Or for that matter, is the future now, and we already have this whether we want it or not, which I still think is going to be kind of an issue for this. And then if there's any other issues on that, too, when it comes to privacy, Andrew Kalerik can take your call on that. And we'll just do that for the first half hour, and then we truly will go open lines. So you can take us wherever you want to go tonight, and I hope you do. That's the fun with open lines. You tell us the things that are happening in your life, the stories that have yet to make it into any sort of mainstream news outlet. That doesn't mean they're not true. And or your questions and comments about what you see coming up, too, in 2008 when it comes to privacy. We'll ask that of Andrew Kalerik next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George, this is Ian Punnett. Tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett, The Crazy Makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. Carol Cimentacci is going to be with us again, and it's an expanded version of the book. So there are new chapters, new information, completely updated. The Crazy Makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children, coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines for the rest of tonight. We'll get it started, though, with some calls for Andrew Kalerik held over from last hour. All the lines are locked. We'll try and get you one for you to join the conversation in the next half hour. But your privacy concerns, Andrew Kalerik's expertise coming together here next. And we'll take a look forward into 2008 and what Andrew Kalerik is worried about most on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, it will be fully open lines. You're coming up shortly, but while we have them, let's go to Chris, east of the Rockies in Cape Cod, for Andrew Kalerik, privacy expert on Coast to Coast AM. Chris?
Yeah, hi, Ian. Good to talk to you. My situation is I don't have a car, I don't have a driver's license, I have no credit cards, and I have no bank accounts.
You're the invisible man.
What I'm just saying, what would happen to me?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you get more invisible than that, Andrew?
Well, actually, it's not that he's invisible. He's just standing in plain sight, which is why no one will see him.
Right.
the fur-lined letter, yes.
the truth of the matter is, somebody with your lack of involvement, as I would put it, that doesn't mean you don't have a full and robust life, but in being involved and ingrained in the systems means that the people, the bureaucrats who process people in the systems, won't know what to do with you. And we have made people's roles so narrow that they can no longer make decisions outside the rules and policies. So you, in the future, may try to acquire something, purchase something, enter a location, and without that identification in some form, they won't let you in.
Oh, so, I have a photo ID from the state of Massachusetts.
Right.
Well,
but even that may not be enough.
It in fact, most places now, for any kind of a security entry, want two forms of identification. One or both should be a photo ID, etc. So there's already some layer of limitation that is being imposed. However, it is always the call of the person in charge or the person at the gate or whatnot. The fact of the matter is, no one can require you to have these types of IDs to enter public places, but they're trying to change that. They want
to make it damn inconvenient. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly the case. They make it so inconvenient that you will give in and acquire the additional forms.
You know, I think this is emphasizing something here, Chris, too, that sometime in our future, we just may not trust an ID that used to, you know, the idea that there was a picture on an ID, and you could look at the person's face, and then you could look at the ID, and you could feel pretty good about that. And let's face it, we really aren't even there anymore. What with all the identity theft going on and the sophistication of computers and printing technology, anybody could make a, you know, state of Massachusetts ID. What else is on the ID? Are there holograms? Is there anything else that helps to verify its authenticity?
The state's been doing this for years now for exactly that reason, because of false IDs. You know, kids using it to buy alcohol, right, and things like that. There are holograms. But
I'd be surprised if the next thing from that hologram isn't an RFID chip, same basis.
Here's the thing, Chris. In my own home state of Ohio, when they first switched to a new driver's license with holograms, within the first week of issuance, several of the DMV offices were broken in, and all of the equipment and the holographic materials and so forth were stolen. Okay, so there is an industry out there that will acquire this stuff and make money.
Counterfeiting, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
So, but eventually, we'll come full circle, and just as Ian said, we're not going to trust ID. That's why we now need two IDs. Well, then we'll need three IDs, and then we'll need a digital chip, and then we'll et cetera, et cetera.
I remember when my wife and I got our first ATM card, and we were completely suspicious of putting our money into a machine, and we kept, like, double receipts, and we just thought the whole thing. And then within about 4 years, it became the other way around. We got so used to the ATM, we didn't really feel like handing our money over to another human being at the bank. We became suspicious of the bank people. All right, let's go west of the Rockies. Dennis is in Phoenix on Coast to Coast AM for Andrew Kolarik. Dennis?
Yeah, hello, Andrew. Andrew, hello, Ian. Long-time listener. Called several times in the past, but
glad to have you.
What I'd like to contribute here is in something you keep coming touching upon, and this has been used for the Second Amendment, the Bill of Rights, but this is going through many. We are losing our rights by default. We are letting the government take over. As I was listening to a conversation that George Norrie was having I don't know who he was talking to, but he was saying, they were talking about the Second Amendment gun ownership rights, and it concluded that it was not about money so much as it was about control. And I think that's what's going on here. This country has always talked about you're innocent until proven guilty. That came about, I believe, because when the British ran the colonies here, you were guilty until proven innocent. It wasn't just the British. Mark Twain commented in one of his lectures. It was humorous, but it is really not laughable, that he was talking about what was un-American, and he says it is not just un-American, it is French. Where you are presumed guilty until proven innocent. It is the burden of the individual accused of being of proving that they are innocent. And
your question or comment for your question rather for Andrew?
Well, I'm making that statement, but I would like at least a response to what I'm saying.
Okay,
how he feels about that himself.
Now let's give Andrew a chance there. Go ahead.
Dennis, I can tell you that I would see one of the major issues that we as people, we the people, need to overcome, need to mobilize, forget all of this nonsense of commercialization and global security and so forth, which all have their important place, But we as citizens absolutely must come to terms with the notion of civilian oversight of our government. When we pass these types of surveillance programs, then we need civilian oversight, not just legislature oversight and so forth. You know, the Founding Fathers said 12 people can determine whether you're guilty or innocent. Why can't 12 average people determine if a program that is going to be intrusive on us is really intrusive? So perhaps what we need is civilian oversight on a lot of these various programs that can maybe then take back some of this nonsense and give us more power to live our lives.
See, and
that's my personal opinion.
I see that. I want to nuance something that that Dennis said, because I actually think this is part of the problem, is that the Constitution is very vague on our rights when it comes to privacy. And in fact, the right to privacy is a fairly constructed right from years of Supreme Court legislation, which in some ways is part of what's being reflected in this conversation tonight, is that the courts created it, and in a lot of ways, the courts are dismantling it. If it were a bedrock right that absolutely was spelled out very clearly what our rights are when it comes to privacy, we wouldn't be having a lot of this conversation. And I think that's the difference between when we talk about our rights are disappearing and what I would argue more accurately is our freedoms are disappearing. And I think we get accustomed to our freedoms and we take the assumption that because they've been our freedoms, that they are our rights. But that becomes a very difficult conversation when, you know, you're looking at even the history of this country, when it wasn't just the British that could decide that you were guilty until proven innocent. There's a whole history of, you know, justice in the Old West, which was very much based on guilty until proven innocent. And there was a lot of shortcuts to justice and lynch mobs and, you know, all that stuff, which, you know, we have to say is part of our DNA, too. And it may also be involved in this conversation. Let's go to the wild card line. Robert is in Massachusetts on Coast to Coast AM for Andrew Kolarik. Robert?
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Ian.
Go ahead, Robert.
How you doing? Well, this is in regards to the ID chips in the ID cards and licenses.
Right.
I took my ID card and my license, and I gave it a 30-second nuke, and I wouldn't recommend anybody doing that unless you really don't plan on using it. But it actually created a circle within a circle, and the plastic has bubbled on both sides. Is there a chip in there?
Is that evidence of the chip?
I'm not entirely sure. You know, I haven't actually seen the physical chips in the ID cards, so I can't tell you where they're located.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that integrated circuits, which is basically what it is, are susceptible to a wide variety of destructive methods. What I would prefer to do is I would rather see the ID actually in action with one of their readers. So I would actually, if I were you, I would test it. I would take it in and say, could you test that this works? Because you can always nuke it again.
Right. Or drop it in fluid somewhere or something. But I think that's a really interesting point, though. What if he did? What if everybody who had that, what if in all these states that are adopting these new RFID driver's licenses, what if everybody nuked their driver's licenses? What if everybody just said, no, I'm going to nuke it? And the next time you got pulled over or they tried to run it, they said, well, there's nothing here. And you just said, well, arrest me because I don't believe in being tracked. I didn't agree to being tracked. And so I nuked it. Sue me.
Well, here's the real question. Who owns that license?
Exactly.
Does the state own it or do
you
own it?
And I don't believe that's
been resolved.
I completely agree.
I think the issuance and the continuance of the license is under the legislature or the government. But when you're in possession of something, if you damage it, are they going to hold you accountable for it? That's really the issue.
I think we should take up the call in Massachusetts. I would have followed that advice right there. And I would say, if I had one and I thought I had an RFID chip in it, I'd nuke it. And then I would just accept the consequences. And if enough people did it, it would clog the courts and they'd have to say, okay, we can't do this. But it would take that kind of civil disobedience to say, my driver's license, my microwave. You know, I can go downstairs right now and I can microwave my driver's license. Nobody can stop me. So I'm with him there. I think that's a very interesting idea. I'll keep pursuing that. International line, let's get a Canadian perspective on this from John on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hi, Ian. How are you? I really like your style.
Oh, thank you. You're talking with Andrew Cleric. Go ahead.
Hi, Andrew. Hey, I can't believe you're still employed. there's no privacy out there. I got a couple quick questions and then a simple statement, and then I can take my answers off the air.
Okay.
I'd like to know, are those satellites up already? And if they are, if they launch them from, say, Canada or, say, Mexico, do those laws apply? And, additionally, those laws would not apply to Canadians or Mexicans. And one of my professors, in my very first year, showed me a very simple trick. And this refers to RFID. Like, if you go to any oscilloscope, and you hang on to both of those leads, your body puts out a radio frequency. And everyone has that. And I hope we all make it through, and I see the idea behind it, but I think privacy is kind of a dead issue. And I thank you very much for your time.
Well, I thank you, John, but I'm not going to be that cynical on that. I think privacy is taking a different form, but it has to. I mean, where are we considered in our private spaces? And in a way, Andrew, don't we come back to where we started on this? You're in your private space when you're in your home. You can't expect privacy if you're walking down the street. You can't expect privacy in about a million other places that people used to take for granted because nobody was actually looking at you. Now they can look at you, and we're reminded we really only have a few corners that we can call our own. True?
Absolutely. The real issue is what does that do to our psychology?
Right.
Okay, if you stare at somebody, you know, go to the zoo and just stare at the monkeys and watch what happens.
Right.
You know, they're the closest to us in you know, mammal form, supposedly. Stare at them. Just stare at them for an hour and watch what they do. Now, if you know that you're being watched continually, there is a percentage of the population that is going to feel an enormous pressure, and all you're doing is creating a force that then has to be outletted in some way. We have to have the right to have some space that we call our own. Otherwise, let's all join a commune where we're never left alone.
All right, but now let's look at that. You mentioned the zoo thing. Let's push back a little bit on a couple of stories this week. The attack of the tiger on Christmas Day, and there's no video of it. Not that I want to see what happens, but we don't know. We're left guessing what happened with the tiger and whether the tiger was able to leap out of the cage, which I'm willing to argue he did or she did. And yet the reaction to that right away is, oh, my God, they don't have any video of that? And people are suspicious because there isn't a video of that. The expectation is that there should have been surveillance videos in that public space of the San Francisco Zoo. So now they're putting cameras in to that space because we couldn't see what happened.
Yes, but are the videos going to prevent it in the future?
No.
In London, they had videos everywhere, and yet they had the subway bombing. They had the bombings.
Yeah, but,
they didn't
but through the cameras,
anything.
Wait, no. Through the cameras, they were able to stop that one other bomb from going off. They used cameras to track that badly parked car that they were able to track, and that stopped at least one of those. I think it was a poorly constructed bomb from going off. Now I'm not trying to take away your point. I'm just saying there's an expectation that the public has now that every public space will be videotaped. And I don't think people, I think people were more shocked to find out that there wasn't a videotape at the San Francisco Zoo than if there had been cameras in that public space. We'll come back to this. I'll tell you what, Andrew, can you give us a little more time or do you got to fly?
Sure. No, no. Okay. I'll stick around.
All right. Well, let's just take it only as many calls as we can get to in the next half hour. But some people have been waiting over half an hour to talk with Andrew Kolarik, and I don't want to deny them that opportunity next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett, the crazy makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. Carol Simontacci is going to be back. Updated includes new chapters for 2008 based on extensive research, a formal study of the relationship between the foods and how they're all driving us nuts, and how you might just be able to resolve some of your own mental issues just on the basis of your diet. And that's coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. And then I'll be filling in for George on New Year's Day night, not the New Year's Eve prediction show. Of course, Art Bell will be back for that, but New Year's Day night on Coast to Coast AM. George traditionally has done this really fun show where he has all sorts of prognosticators on, and they talk about various issues coming up for 2008, psychics and just researchers, and we'll continue that tradition without George coming up on the New Year's Eve day night show on Coast to Coast AM. All right, so as we complete our morphing into this new studio, I am now, for the first time ever, on Coast to Coast. I mean, it's after 9 years, I will be picking up and putting people on hold or hanging up on them on my own remotely from the Los Angeles studios. I'll be doing it remotely here in the Twin Cities. It's the first time I've ever attempted to use this technology. I will screw this up. People who should be on the air won't be. People who shouldn't be on the air will be. But we're going to try it for the rest of Open Lines tonight and see how it goes. Coming up next, we'll take the rest of our calls with Andrew Kolarik before we go Open Lines for the rest of the night on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. Andrew Kolarik on Coast to Coast AM, talking privacy for the rest of this hour. Let's go ahead and grab Chris. Chris, you're going to be my first attempt at picking up a caller on my own. Chris in Los Angeles, first-time caller line, are you there?
Hey, Ian, how are you doing?
All right. So far, so good. Thank you. You're talking with Andrew Kolarik.
You had mentioned that you didn't worry too much about this system as long as it's for law enforcement. But, you know, I'm a commercial truck driver, and when we get one of those licenses, we surrender our right to search and seizure. And that when you get inspected on your truck, they give you one of three classifications, either good to go, optional, or inspect. And we had a driver quit suspiciously, just parked the truck and got on a plane. And the next driver that got into that truck, he cannot get by a weigh station without getting inspected or logbook checked. They think he's carrying drugs, every day. And
right.
It reminds me of the movies like Minority Report, The Web,
right,
and Enemy of the State. And it's all well and good until somebody has a grudge against you, like, oh, I don't know, some rabble-rousing radio talk show host. They might flag you and make your life a living hell.
Wait, I'm sorry. Suddenly now I feel very guilty until proven innocent, Chris.
Another law in California is you're required to carry ID and currency, and when they find a homeless person that needs medical assistance or something, they go ahead and chip him. That was a rumor. I don't know if that's for sure. But
I'd be curious about that.
Yeah, I wonder if they could make that law for your guest.
And can they make microwave ovens big enough for us to chip ourselves, you know, to get ourselves unchipped?
MRI.
So where are you with that? Andrew, any of that sound familiar?
Well, Chris, the technology is there. Its application is going to be used for good and bad. A lot of states feel they need to control the trucks and the truck flow and keep track and monitor and be able to inspect whenever they want and so forth. It's not an issue of the technology. It's an issue of using the existing laws that were put in place prior to the technology And now that the technology is there, it opens the door for increased inspection.
All right.
So, the problem lies in that we've exceeded our own wisdom to use these systems. And people are somewhat apathetic until it affects them. So the truckers unions and truck drivers alike all have a vested interest in seeing where this technology goes and how it's being used. But until they can actually demonstrate to the average person how it's going to affect them, this type of advance is going to continue.
But aren't Chris and Andrew too address this, but aren't truckers always in a unique category in this conversation? Because the trucks really are sort of like moving toll roads. They're revenue producers for the highway systems. And because they use the highway system, they pay more for the highway system than, say, the average person would, because it's part of their, you know, it's part of the commerce. And so, in a way, I mean, trucks will always be, and have for decades now, been in a different category where they are considered a revenue producer. Each and every one of them is a revenue producer for the state, because the state uses that money to pay for the roads which the truckers drive on. Is that unfair?
Well, but ultimately, it's not an unfair statement, but ultimately, the consumer bears the cost of all of this. The consumer bears the cost of inspections, of road constructions, reconstructions, the price that goes into the shipping of products, and ultimately end up priced for the consumer who then purchases. So we're all paying for this stuff. But we're not really having that discussion, because it's rather inconvenient.
No, I get that, but I just mean truckers. For a trucker to be inspected to make sure that they're paying enough for what they have, for what they're carrying, isn't that the unique feature of trucking? And that by agreeing to be a trucker, you're agreeing to this system where the revenue produced by your truck is going to be used for the roads.
In principle, I agree. But take a look at what they're trying to do in New York with taxis. They want to monitor all of the taxis. And the taxi drivers basically said, hey, we're going on strike and we're not going
right.
to, you know, so forth. So I don't think it's an issue of what you actually do, although that is a consideration. I think it's an issue of how much control are we going to assert on these processes that we all rely upon?
Yeah,
go ahead. That's a collective decision.
It would be interesting to see what would happen if you attempted to monitor the monitors and said to the police, your local municipalities, we want to be able to track where our police officers are 24 hours a day. We want to be able to see on a computer online where the cops are. And I know that there's some real security issues for that, but that may be part of what eventually might move that issue into a different discussion. Let's go to Utah. Mike is on Coast to Coast AM for Andrew Kalerick. Mike?
Hey, Ian and Andrew. Nice to talk to you. Good show. I've got a scenario in the very near future where an RFID chip could either implicate you in a crime or even convict you of a crime, and I'm going to use Ian as the victim here. Obviously, always use Ian as a victim.
I am. It's because I am.
let's say in the near future, RFID chips are in all the inventories for all goods and services. Ian goes down to his local store, purchases a coat, and at the point of sale, that coat and the RFID chip is transferred personally from the inventory to Ian, and that's identifying Ian as the owner of the coat and the chip. And so Ian goes all over town. They've got readers at all the portals, and Ian's proud of his new coat, and he goes into an eatery. He's a sloppy eater, drops some mustard on it, and it can't get the stain out, and he says, I don't like this coat anymore. He throws it away. Homeless guy comes along, picks up Ian's coat, goes next door, breaks in.
Right.
And in the commission of a robbery, murders Ian's neighbor, bloodstains on it. Guy runs out the back door, throws his coat in the corner of the yard. Police process it, read the coat, say, Ian's coat, victim's blood. Ian is now got to prove himself innocent. And, you know, this happened while Ian's in his home, and
he's right. not read anywhere else. So how does that scenario get worked out?
Well, I would add one additional thing to that scenario, because this is Ian. He is a public person in the news, part of the news, and so you would see the news media also then implicate Ian in this robbery.
True.
Or in this break-in, because the job of the prosecutor is to prosecute, and if he can get enough public opinion to come forward to verify whether Ian's alibi is correct or not and so forth, there could be significant media coverage. And now all of a sudden, because, you know, even backtrack it, maybe Ian is just such a nice guy. He saw a homeless guy. He said, here, you're right. cold. Take my coat.
Right.
So now all of a sudden, Ian, you're on television saying, but I didn't do anything. And all the commentators for hours and hours, because they have nothing else to say, say, well, Ian must have done something. Otherwise, right. we wouldn't be investigating him.
Right.
Right.
No, and suddenly my life sounds so boring. My real life is so dull by comparison to that excitement. And I these are really great questions, and I don't know that there ever is an answer, Mike. How does that get played out? Maybe on the television show Law and Order or something like that. Maybe the first couple of places we'll see where this conversation will take place, because it is so complicated and it is a brave, new, very scary world. Charles in Little Rock, Arkansas, on Coast to Coast AM on the wildcard line for Andrew Kolarik. Charles?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Basically, what I was wanting to touch is on this new biometric database of the FBI. They call it the Edge. And apparently that for the last 2 years, the Department of Defense has been storing databases on images of fingerprints, irises, faces, more than 1.5 million Iraqis, Afghanistanians,
right.
citizens,
right.
Engineers dealing with the U.S. to protect
yep.
them on the bases. They've even been collecting DNA samples from them. And here, they're about to start it on us.
Well, not to mention even getting a fingerprint from you because you've been pulled over, not
yeah.
because you've been charged yet, but just even
yeah.
being pulled over. Andrew?
Well, that's, again, this is the ever-increasing threshold, which is being lowered on a regular basis due to the technology. The problem lies in, and by the way, Ian, I would have to say this is my prediction for next year. So to answer the
yes.
The question and make a prediction, I'm going to say that by the end of next year, one of these major databases containing all of this biometric and personal information stored by the government is going to be breached by either a criminal syndicate or a foreign power, and that information is then going to be exposed to other ramifications. And that's really the biggest threat. Is once that data is out, you can't get it back.
Yep. And we just,
that's the threat.
There was a story today in our local news here about a government computer that's missing, I think in Philadelphia, that contains all of the personal data for about 200 citizens in Minnesota. And they are looking into it right away, and they're trying to contact all of the people and assuring them that, don't worry, it's encrypted. And I thought, okay, those are famous last words.
Well, didn't they assure everybody that this would never fall into bad hands and it won't be used or misused? I remember all these conversations.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is we've been hearing these promises of how it's only for government use and no one else will be able to access it and so forth. The only way to secure this data is to stop collecting it.
Let's get to Joe in Florida on a wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Andrew Kolarik. Joe?
Good morning, Andrew and Ian. Ian, I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling about, from my own personal experience, some government abuse. We're talking about human nature here, and if they have this technology, they will abuse it. Andrew's 100% correct when he calls for some kind of civilian oversight, because you've got a lot of these agencies cannot police themselves. There's like an inherent conflict of interest, and they won't, and it's just going to lead to greater abuse. I don't want to get in any trouble here. You know, basically, I'm just an average American. I did send a letter along with some evidence, including a VHS tape of illegal electronic surveillance by the state of Florida, to FBI Director Mueller. Now, I'm waiting for him to reply to me. I sent him a tape. The tape that I sent him was the same tape that I sent to State Attorney Steve Meadows in the 14th Judicial Circus. Circuit in Florida.
Did you put circus on the envelope? Because that may account for why you haven't gotten a reply.
No.
Okay.
I sent it to the Honorable Steve Meadows. He hasn't replied. I asked him a simple question. Did you view the tape? The long and short of it is, through some misunderstanding with some misguided individuals in law enforcement, they arranged for some illegal surveillance devices on the utility poles servicing the house and grounds. It's a very sophisticated technology. Incidentally, there is a satellite uplink. It's audio-visual. I was able to record an audio phenomenon that was indicative of electronic surveillance. It's like it's recently I was able to record it, and those are the tapes that I sent in. I've had three surveillance experts already confirm that indeed place is bugged. Even one of the vehicles was bugged with a remotely activated transponder. They didn't supply the reports primarily because they were threatened, tampered with, and I can prove that. But at any rate, the purpose that I'm calling is, you know, there's either a Fourth Amendment or there isn't a Fourth Amendment. You know, you're either American or you're not American. I think most people are apathetic. Most Americans are apathetic, and Andrew kind of noted that too. That unless it directly affects somebody individually, most people don't care. What's going to happen is it's going to affect a lot of people before too much longer for a variety of reasons. Oversight is needed on the surveillance device. They have these things, and it is human nature to abuse them.
Right. No, I totally get that. Hang on to that thought, Joe, because our time's running out, and I want to get to Megan here, too. She's been hanging on for a little while for Andrew Kolarik. So thanks for that comment. And an interesting story. I would tell you, by the way, do a little five-minute movie of that and put it on YouTube. And I'm really serious about that. That still is your right as an American, and that freedom of speech issue is not in question here. Put it on YouTube. You've tried. You went through channels. Didn't get anywhere. Put it on YouTube. Send us the link. We'll put it on our website.
Thank you. Joe, I think what you're doing is perfectly within your rights to address an issue, to bring it forward. It doesn't sound like you're polarizing the people in the best position to do something about it. And I think that's the prudent way to go. So if they ignore you, I agree with Ian. Put it out there for the bloggers, for the video people, for anybody who wants to consume that which you believe to be true and is important that needs to be addressed.
Let's get Megan. It's number four. Hey, Megan, Michigan, you're on Coast to Coast AM. I just ask you to keep it short if you can so we can get you in before the top of the hour.
I even have it written down, so I'll read it really quick. I'm in Michigan, and we have the largest Muslim population in the U.S. If I'm not mistaken, Muslim women do not have to take off their hijabs or niqab for driver's license. But I, as a non-Muslim, if I'm wearing a hat or a sunglasses, I have to take them off. As a Christian, what is my constitutional religious right if I feel the RFID chip is the mark of the beast, and I decide to refuse it? Also,
microwave it. We've already talked about it. Microwave it. Why not? And Andrew, real quickly, don't they make people, even with hijabs, take their picture with their face?
Yeah, what is being displayed is not necessarily what the total process is. If they are trying to take pictures of people who are not showing their face, then they're violating their own rules.
Okay, that's all the time we have. I am so grateful for your time, Andrew. As always, it's a pleasure. and look forward to getting you back on again sometime soon on Coast to Coast AM, as always. Thank you, bud.